Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Angela Bishop, and for the past 30 years, I've been lucky enough to interview some of the funniest, loveliest, and zaniest celebrities around. There have been some cracker interviews, but what you see on TV is usually just a fraction of what's actually recorded. Find out what went off before the cameras went on. This is Starstruck with me, Ange Bishop. I've got a bit of a treat for you today. I've made a mixtape of a few of my all-time faves. And first up is the amazing Keith Urban. I first interviewed Keith longer ago than either of us would care to remember, of course, at Tamworth, the country music capital of Australia. And thinking back on those days, it reminds me of just how hard Keith Urban has worked to get to where he is now, which is, you know, top of the country music tree. Just fills stadiums around the world. Just an extraordinary singer and performer. I've been lucky enough to catch up with him many times over the years. I, of course, covered his amazing wedding to our own Oscar winner Nicole Kidman. He really is an extraordinarily talented man and a very, very good man too. So I look forward to bringing you a bit of this chat. Looking at all the amazing things you've achieved, all of the awards, and also I knew you'd been inducted into the Grand Ole Opry, but I never realised you were the first non-North American to be inducted. Well, I mean, these crazy honours, just amazing. Yeah. Do you pinch yourself at moments like that and go, it was worth every pub gig, every night on the road?
Absolutely. I said years ago when I managed to buy my first house in Nashville, I remember driving up to it and thinking, every single brick in this house is a gig.
Yeah,
right. You know, that's how I saw it. It was just, it's interesting. Someone asked the other day about, you know, if you could shortcut your way to a career, like some of the TV shows offer certain people, would you do it? I was thinking, you know, no one wants to pay their dues. No one wants to slog it out in the pubs for a decade or 15 years or 20 years. But man, there's a big plus to it when you do. That great feeling of not only accomplishment, but all that experience comes into play over and over again. I find it, you know, on tour, something goes awry, and you know what to do. You know what to do in a nanosecond, and the set list isn't working here, or that's not working, or something's happening, and there's a kerfuffle in the audience. There's like a million things, and I often find myself thinking, here it is. Here's all the gigs in Brizzy and everywhere else paying off right in this moment.
Yeah, because you're experienced. You've got the 10,000 hours, as they say. I mean, in your case, I think it might be a lot more.
Yeah.
A lot more. Your beautiful girls, are they still backstage whenever they can, whenever they get a chance, when it doesn't interfere with school too much?
They like being on the bus, you know. They're not overly keen about seeing Dad play all the time.
Harsh.
You know, keeping it real. I'm like, Sunday, do you want to come see me play? She goes, oh, do I have to? Because it always falls right at their bedtime too. You know, they go to bed like 8 o'clock and I go on stage at 9. So, they love the bus and bunks and the whole thing.
The downside, I suppose, of the fame that you have attracted now with all this success is ridiculous magazine headlines that come out week in, week out, no matter how untrue they're proved to be constantly by time. And I know you and Nick can put it to one side and sort of not, right? Are you worried about when the girls start getting a bit older that they're going to be able to read this stuff?
Yeah, of course. This is a crazy part of society. So it is what it is, right? You just deal with it.
And tell them the same thing you do, just ignore it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they know. I mean, everybody who knows us knows it's a bunch of crap. But yeah, that's just something they're going to have to learn to deal with.
When we saw you play, you had your beloved banjo, which you told a great story about, and a six-string banjo, isn't it? Quite unique. And I loved the story of you buying that instrument and working it into the show. Is that something you hope one of the girls has, an interest in music and has an instrument they have a passion for, like you do then?
Well, I think, like most parents, we just want them to have a passion for anything. I think that's key, and a willingness. I mean, the thing, too, about a work ethic and all that is, I think if you have the passion, that automatically comes. It certainly was that case for Nick and I. We loved what we did, and were willing to put in whatever time it took because we loved doing it. Mm. So hopefully our kids will find that passion as well.
You made a beautiful little video with Nick of the fight early on in the car. Tell me a little of the story about how that came about.
We just wanted to film a little, like the James Corden thing that he does with the
carpool karaoke,
exactly. We thought we'd do our own version of carpool karaoke, and we'd never done it before, so we sort of like got the little thing to put the phone on the windscreen, and we were going to go out and drive around and film ourselves lip-syncing the song. And we sat in the driveway and just gave it a trial run, and the bloody Bluetooth thing cut out halfway through, and then we stopped and looked at it back. You know, we only got halfway through and we looked at it back and we're like, oh, this is ridiculous, you know, let's not bother with this. Which is why we're stuck in the driveway. We're not even driving in the footage, because we intended to go out later and do it properly, and we bailed on the whole idea. And about a week afterwards, Nick was showing a friend of hers the footage, and her friend said, oh, you guys should post that, like, as is. So we watched it again, and we found ourselves just laughing hysterically at how silly it was, and we just posted it.
I'm going to tell you a little story. A few years ago, before you met Nick, we were at a cocktail party, and I'd just married my husband, Peter, who you know is a New Zealander as well. And I said to Nick, I said, what you've got to find yourself is a Kiwi. And to this
day,
serious? I take credit for just sewing that little seat.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm totally serious. And she said, I'll take that on board.
Wow.
So there you go.
Well, thanks, Angela.
That's all.
I'll do what I can.
Big.
Niall Horan was thrust into the spotlight as part of supergroup One Direction. But as with a lot of these ventures, all good things must come to an end. And as we know, that's what happened. Rather than resting on his laurels, Niall took the bold step of going out on his own. He came over to Oz in 2017 after the release of that brilliant song Slow Hand. He was quite open about the solo life, the boys in the band, and how one of his idols became one of his best friends. Niall, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And we've got this great news for you. You're coming to the country straight to number one. How good's that with Slow Hands?
It's good, yeah. Definitely makes that flight worthwhile, yeah, definitely. It's just amazing, really. It was a bit of a shock, and I was happy that I'm here when I did go to number one.
Yeah, you've got to be happy. So talk me through when you signed your contract with Capitol Records, which is such an historic label. And then how did you go about working out what direction you wanted to go in? Using a pun on the band, but what Niall's sound was going to be.
I actually didn't find it that. Some artists will find it hard to figure out what they want to do. I find it actually all right. I just wanted to make an album that I would naturally just pick up a guitar while I'm sitting on the couch and what I would normally just play as I'm practicing or whatever. And I guess that takes me back to what I grew up on, bands like Fleetwood Mac and the Eagles and stuff like that. That's basically what I've known since I was 3 or 4 years old. And yeah, just I wanted to make that sort of an album, so when I came to it, it didn't sound like it was going to be that difficult. And obviously the writing starts, and that's the hardest part.
How long did that take you?
Well, I've been kind of writing on and off, mostly on rather than off, since started writing March or April last year.
Oh, okay.
So I've been at it for a while, and I probably wrote the last song in probably March this year, so it was probably a year in the making. And then yeah, it's been really fun. I got to choose my producer, who I wanted to produce the album. I wanted to make sure that we recorded everything with a live band. Makes a bit of a difference, obviously. And yeah, it was a really, really fun process.
No more having to check with four other people what they thought about it.
Exactly, yeah, because we would write stuff. Previously, we would write stuff and we'd all bring it back to each other, and then you'd have to have harsh conversations about what was good and what wasn't. But this time it was completely down to me. And I guess that brings a touch of added pressure too. and having to, you know exactly what you want, how you want every song. And I did. As I was writing them, I knew exactly what I wanted the songs to sound like, down to the tiniest little details. And I'm still kind of finishing off those tiny little mixing production stuff, little bits and pieces here and there right now. And then I'll be ready to go.
So the rest of, so many other guys in the band are going solo at the same time. Were you concerned that you'd in any way sound similar, or did you know everyone would be totally different?
Yeah, I had before anyone brought any music out, I had a fair idea. You know, we all have individual tastes of music. I'd say myself and Harry would have the most similar tastes of music, and we would listen to quite a lot of the same stuff, to be fair. But yeah, I would have a fair idea what everyone was going to sound like. And I guess that's what makes it so much fun at the minute. We're all in the chart, we're completely different music, and everyone's doing well, so it's all good.
You mentioned Fleetwood Mac before. Were you a little bit jealous when Harry got up with Stevie Nicks at the Troubadour?
No doubt about it, yeah. That was hard to watch. I love Stevie Nicks. She's one of my favourite songwriters of all time. And he pulled that one out of the bag, and fair play to him. Congrats.
Is there a competition between you guys? I mean, in this solo career, how do you handle it?
There's not really, none at all, to be honest. We all still keep in touch most days. And if we were releasing similar types of music, there probably would be a bit of friendly kind of banter between us, but there's actually none, and everyone's just really happy for each other. You can see, like, we basically have a bit of an email chain going on there, and you can see everyone just, like, all the time congratulating each other if there's a TV performance that someone did well on, or, you know, whatever. There's always something popping up from someone, so we're always congratulating each other and stuff.
Is there an artist, and you've mentioned the ones you listen to and so forth, or a band, or someone whose career you think, that's what I want to do, that's what I want to achieve, and have you been lucky enough to meet them?
Yeah, I would say Don Henley is probably my biggest inspiration. And more so now on a personal level, I've got to know him over the last few years. His daughter came to a show, a One Direction show one time, Annabelle. And I just became friendly through that. And then the Eagles were playing in London, and she wanted to introduce me to Don. And I was like bricking it, didn't know what was going on. And then introduced to Don, and he basically kind of took me under his wing and introduced me to the whole family, and it was great. And But since then, you know, every song that I've written, I've kind of sent to him or got notes on it, and he's just
from Don,
and it's great because he's just so brutally honest, and he's just been such a big help on every level. I know we spoke about maybe trying to write together, and which is mind blowing to me, because I went to my first concert when I was 4, and it was an Eagles concert. That's all I've known since I was a child. My dad and my mum are both huge Eagles fans, and it's just great to have the guy, you know, who I watched on stage for so many years or listened to his stuff, one of the greatest songwriters of all time, is there just on the end of my email if I need him.
That is brilliant.
And he's a great guy as well, so it helps.
Yeah, I just think that's magic. And he's done the thing. He said the solo career, the band career, gone from one to the other, one to the other one. It's exactly, you know, what I can see you doing for the rest of your life.
And like 40-odd years, 50 years later nearly, you know, He's 70 this year. Sorry, Don. and he's still touring to arenas and stuff all over the place. So that's the kind of career you want, really, isn't it, when you set out to start on anything?
Yeah. So where are you in the band? Is it a hiatus? Are there plans loosely to reform at some stage?
Yeah, there hasn't been a conversation of when, but we all know that it's really stupid not to, to be honest. We all know that our solo careers are not going to be as big as anything, anywhere near what we did with One Direction. So, and One Direction changed all of our lives, and we wouldn't be able to do this if it wasn't for that. So be very silly not to.
Reality show was, of course, X Factor was where you guys were all discovered and put together. You would have met out on the road now other graduates from other reality shows. Yeah. Do you feel that it's been legitimised, that it's a legitimate way to make it into the music industry now, or do you still feel there's a bit of stigma?
It's always going to carry that stigma, because of the way it's put on, it's on their telly every Saturday night or whatever it is, and that's the way it's going to be, and the way the production is and stuff like that. But I think it's proven it over the years. So many artists have come off these shows and had success. One Direction, for instance, Kelly Clarkson, Jennifer Hudson, all these kind of people.
Carrie Underwood. Yeah, all different genres.
Yeah, all different types. And it's kind of proven itself in ways, as much as some people might not want to think so. But like, you know, I guess that's the pop world, and it, you know, some people like pop and some people don't, and that's part and parcel of it, really.
Indeed. It's also proved the pathway to true love in a couple of instances. I'm thinking Cheryl and Liam.
Yeah.
And now you and Katie, by all
I knew that was going to happen.
That's how the rumour mill would like it to go. Yeah. But you two are obviously very good mates.
Yeah, yeah. Katie had was a pivotal part of me being here right now. And she knows it. She loves it. So do I, in fairness. She's such a great woman. Really fun to be around. And, it's a good laugh. I'm sure we'll see each other over the course of the weekend. I think she gets in today or something like that. So I'm sure I'll see her at The Voice or whatever.
Yeah, no, good fun. You did an amazing performance at the Ariana Grande Love Manchester concert. Doing something like that, what goes through your mind? You're passionate about your new song, but you know it's such an important event. How do you keep your own emotions in check when you do a performance like
that? Yeah, kind of what you think of your own songs goes out the window that day. It sounds cliche, but it was a roller coaster of emotions that day. When I arrived, I did my sound check, and it was all a bit like eerie, and like I could tell it was different than any gig we'd ever done before. And then I went into the dressing room. I'm good friends with Ariana, so I was able to, you know, go and see her, and she was telling me some stories of how she met some of the kids at the hospital and met the families of some of the victims of the or people who have lost their lives at the hospital and at the hotel or whatever, I think. And she was telling me so, and she was clearly emotional about it, and it was making me emotional too, obviously, because you only see what you see on the TV or on the news or whatever, and that's all you can get from it. So to hear from that side of it was quite emotional. But then 5 minutes later, we were chatting away about what was going to unfold that day, and obviously no one really knew what was going to turn out like, but like it was, you know, how happy everyone was and how people are not scared to go to concerts where we thought people would actually do that. Where they would, like, it would stop them from going to concerts. And then, less than 2 weeks after a terrible tragedy in that city, 50,000 people turned up and really unified. And there's not too many things that can do that apart from music, really. Music and sport and a couple of other things that can really pull people together. And it was just amazing. The least we could do was, I drove 3 hours, so it's nothing for me. And, you know, it's just a human, you know, it's common human courtesy to come and do that. It's not like you have to overthink it. So people flying in, it's, you know, people keep saying to me, oh, the artist this, the artist that. But it's so simple for us to just get on a plane and try and bring some smiles on faces with the music that we do. And I found during this town, when I was just standing there with my acoustic guitar, I was really nervous just before I sung it. And I was catching just like some of the lyrics, I'd written them for a completely different reason, but
yeah.
Some of the lyrics were quite relatable to what was going on, like even the first line of the song, waking up to kiss you and nobody's there. There's people there who've lost lives. It means something completely different to me, the lyric itself, but it opens itself up to that as well. And I was catching people's eyes in the crowd some were crying, and the next person over here is smiling and laughing. And it was really like I don't want to say strange, but it was different gig than I've ever done before, but it was so beautiful. Remember another moment was, I think Justin Bieber was singing Love Yourself, his song Love Yourself, and he was just playing it on his guitar. And then I just started seeing this, like, I looked down into the crowd, I was up in this balcony that was looking over everyone, and there was this circle started to form. I was like, what's going on over there? So I started to video it on my phone. I thought if this unfolds into something cool, and then I did. And the police were, loads of policemen were dancing around, they made this big circle, and they were dancing around with all the kids in the audience. I was like, you don't see this anywhere. But it's horrible that something like that has to happen for such a great moment like that, but... You know, it was just an all-around great day.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The Reality Bite is back, and we are talking all things Bachelor in Paradise.
I'm Talia Pritchard from Punky.
I'm Nat Whitehead from Channel 10.
And we will be wrapping up everything that's happened in Bachelor in Paradise on a weekly basis for you guys.
So if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to the podcast. We can't wait to see you there.
And only leave us nice reviews.
Yeah, leave us nice reviews.
Next up is someone who's been in the biz for 50 years, but at one point thought seriously about throwing it all away. We're so glad he didn't. Billy Ocean has had a string of hits over the years. I bet you're all humming Caribbean Queen right now. This is the first time this interview has been played in its entirety, and I have a fun fact for you too. Did you know that Billy Ocean actually has 3 lungs? Billy Ocean, what an absolute treat to be talking to you today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me.
All of the gang downstairs knows I'm lucky enough to be talking to you today, and all I've heard around the office today is people humming, whistling and singing all different songs from Billy Ocean. And, you know, what is it? Is that joyous for you too, that people all over the world hear your name and songs pop into their heads?
Of course. I mean, the ambition for me growing up was to be a successful artist in whatever category, really. I think one of the nicest things for me to be hearing the songs on the radio. Another joy is, like, when I go out and do concerts, have all the people singing the songs. I mean, what could be better than that?
What was the very first song of yours you heard on the radio?
Love Really Hurts Without You, back in 76.
And was that also the first song you ever wrote?
First professional song that I wrote.
Oh, what's the difference between a professional song and...
Well, a professional song is, let's say, when you know what you're doing, basically.
Oh, okay.
The others, you're just sort of doing what you think is right. But then the first one that becomes as a full successful is your first professional song, I guess.
Well, that is a bit of a doozy. What was the inspiration for that song? Was it a bad breakup? What had happened?
No, just sort of desire to ambition. Ambition, really. I wrote that song after I bought a piano for £23 from one of the... I was in a rag trade when I left school.
In the rag trade?
Rag trade, yeah.
Fashion?
Fashion, yeah. Well, you can call it fashion. But my ambition was always music. My father was a musician. And my ambition was always music. And I bought the piano and I had the novelty of it was like a novelty in the sense of I work close to where I live, basically. So I always used to, when lunchtime came, I used to go home and play with my piano.
Perfect.
When the evening came, I'd go home and play with the piano. One day, and I'm self-taught, one day I sat by the piano and I sort of, it just happened. I went, dun 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 dun, you run around town like a fool, and everything just came together and that was it. Finished off the song. Next thing I know, I've got a number 2 record, and I thought it would be the only one, but lo and behold, by the...
So who did Love Really Hurt Without? Who did you write it about?
Well, I did... The person who really became my wife eventually, I suppose it was inspired by her, I guess. I'd like to think so.
Did you
She would like to think that is...
Did you have a bit of a breakup or something?
You do, don't you?
Yeah.
You sort of fall in and out when you're that age. I knew my wife since she was... I was 15 and she was 13. So it's been a long...
Childhood sweetheart.
Long relationship.
How long have you been married?
I don't know, To me, that's not important. The fact that we're still together, the fact we've still got this thing going, this relationship going, we've got grandchildren, we've got kids. So to me, that's more important than knowing how long.
And what's the secret for you two? What's the magic? What's
kept
the magic?
I like to think it's love.
Well, yes.
Yeah, love and respect for each other. And, you know, it's you've got something, you keep it going.
Of course.
You keep it going.
Work hard?
Nothing is, it's hard work sometimes. And nothing is perfect, right? But you keep it going. And we've got, you know, the backdrop is I've got music to concentrate on and keep the whole thing going. So, yeah, I've got other thoughts.
You do have a lot of thoughts. Let's talk about some of your other songs. Caribbean Queen.
Right.
Who's the Caribbean Queen? Is that your wife too?
I suppose she has to be. But there are plenty of Caribbean Queens, right?
There sure are.
Some beautiful Caribbean Queens out there.
I know you wrote When the Going Gets Tough, the Tough Get Going for Jewel of the Nile.
Jewel of the Nile, yeah.
Did you get to interact with Michael Douglas
very
and
much,
Kathleen Turner?
Michael Douglas, Danny DeVito and Kathleen Turner. And they came over from Los Angeles and, you know, I was really sort of dubious about what the whole response was going to be or the interaction was going to be, but it worked out to be incredible. It's my best video.
They were just dancing around. They
natural,
loved it.
They were natural. They just did it.
And that was their first reaction
that
to
was
it.
That's right.
How good's that?
That's right.
So did you enjoy the process of writing for a Hollywood movie like that? Or
yeah, it's great.
Didn't
I
mind?
Mean, no, because, I mean, what it's I mean, from a business point of view, it's the best. It's great royalties. Number
is
one,
is it?
It is
good to
good.
Know.
Film royalties. Are,
so if you get a song on a movie,
oh yeah, it's very very good, very lucrative, you know. But from a business point of view, but not just that, it's a sort of prestige of doing something.
Sure.
It's there's not very many things that I step out of my musical box to do. Like some, you know, I might be asked to do films, I've been asked to do that. I'm not interested in anything really but doing the music. But to be able to be asked to do write for a film, I think that's something exceptional.
Something else that people like to use music for is advertising. And you have a pretty firm view. You don't want any of your songs linked with selling alcohol.
Right, that's right.
Why
that's
is
right.
that?
Well, because I just want to encourage certain things. I just want to encourage certain things because I think there's enough. We've got enough problems in this world. We've got enough problems based on economy, basically. People wanting to make money off the wrong things, basically. Why should I encourage when I can get money or whatever elsewhere? As a songwriter, as a, you know, there are other advertisement that my songs can be used in, like which it has been used in. Things like advertising chocolate, advertising cars, advertising. Even McDonald's was the latest one.
What did McDonald's use? Which song?
You would not believe it. Suddenly.
Oh, really?
Suddenly.
So, not what you envisaged when you wrote it.
No, you know, songs are. I don't know how other people write. You create things. It's like
sure.
whatever the artistic person. It's like a painter who gets an imagination and paints something. As a writer, you get a melody, you get an idea lyrically, and you develop it, and it becomes. And please God, lo and behold, you end up with a good song. Please God,
you end up
if you know what you're doing.
You end up with good song after
Thank
good
you.
Song after
Thank
good
you.
Song after
Thank
good
you.
Song.
It's hard work. It's not easy.
So they don't come to you easily? You don't sit down
sometimes,
and go, oh, whip it out?
Sometimes, but not very often.
So how long can a song take to
oh
write?
Oh, my God, it can take anything. It can take weeks. It can take not to. It depends what sort of environment you're in. If I find that if I'm in the studio, I go in with like a couple of tracks to start with, and once I'm in the studio and my creative juices get going, things just happen. And it happens to a lot of people. I'm not the only person that happens to, yeah.
You've collaborated a bit with Mutt Lange.
That's right.
Now he
great producer.
Yeah, he did a lot of work with the seminal Australian band AC/DC, of course.
Great. One of my favourite bands, by the way.
Indeed.
AC/DC, of course.
Do you know the guys? Have you met
no,
them?
No, I don't. I
you
don't
just
know.
Like them.
AC/DC. I know a few AC/DC men at work, but of course we know the Bee Gees. Don't talk about the
of course.
Bee Gees and people like Oliver Newton-John. A lot of great music have come out of Australia.
Very true.
As far as I'm concerned.
I think you're absolutely right.
Very good
right.
music has come out of Australia.
But working with Mutt, what was that like for you? You guys seem to have a bit of a good relationship. Yeah.
Well, Mutt is one of these producers that he hears a record, he hears the complete record in his head before it's finished. There are very few people like that.
Yeah, right.
He's very, very creative producer. Incredible producer. Hard to work with.
Okay.
Very demanding. You know, to work with Mutt, you have to be prepared to go through the mill, basically. But the end result
worth
is
it.
Going to be excellent. It's well worth it.
Mm.
We did How Many Tracks? We did it together. Get Out of My Dreams, Tough, Lover Boy, License to Chill, things I can remember.
You must have got on enough to be able to do that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Get out of my head and into my car. Tell
yeah.
me about that song. Where did that come from?
Well, that was I must admit that was a Mutt idea.
Was it?
Yeah, the title, the
yeah.
lyrical idea.
Because it's not you sort of go, hey.
That's right. I know. I know.
I mean, Girls and Cars.
That's right.
Have, you know, the songs about girls and cars that go way, way back. But yours was a unique take.
Thank you. But, you know, the interesting thing you say about Girls and Cars, I had when the song came out in England, they wouldn't play it on the radio because they reckon it would encourage kids to get into people's cars.
Oh, hitchhiking or something?
Yeah, that sort of vibe, sort of thing. You know, but it didn't stop it from being a hit, basically. I think it sort of created a sort of the curiosity of Affair and the Record, et cetera, but
getting banned can sometimes not be a bad marketing idea.
That's right, there you go. There you go.
Absolutely. 5 decades in the business, but you did have a sabbatical.
Yes, I did.
And a long sabbatical.
That's right.
Very few people step away from showbiz in any form.
That's right.
For 18 years, 17 years. 17 years.
Yeah.
And then can come back.
That's right.
A, why did you do it? And B, how did you come back?
Mystery. You know, Angela, I had done quite a few of the dreams that I had come to fruition, had come to reality. Like, for example, being successful in America, breaking the American market. After doing all that...
Winning a Grammy.
And Grammy, et cetera, et cetera. After doing all that and touring, I remember one day I was in a hotel and I looked out the window and I thought, what am I doing? And you have success, but sometimes success can have a negative side of it as well. People around you start, I don't know, being envious. I don't know what you want to call it, really. And I wasn't enjoying it that much anymore.
Really?
And I thought to myself, well, instead of losing the flavor, let me just... And then my kids started. My kids were growing up. My wife was having to deal with 3 kids in 3 different schools. And I thought, you know what? Money is one thing, but your kids is your responsibility. Now, by that time, I wasn't a poor man anymore, basically. I wasn't a multimillionaire, but I wasn't a poor man. And I just thought, you know, let me just... It's a good time to take some time out. The record company as well, Jive, the person I was working closest with, who was the head of the record company, was moving to America. Now, really and truly, I should have gone and followed, but it didn't work out that way, to sort of uproot my whole family and go to America. So I thought, you know what, let me take some time out, spend some time with my kids for a few years. But it ended up being 17 years.
Wow. So basically, they grew up.
Well, exactly. And once they've grown up, in very much the same way I made the decision to have a break, I made the decision when I looked around, I realized that, I'm not saying I wasn't needed anymore, but I wasn't needed in that respect. And I thought, you know, why don't I come back out and see if I'm still enjoying this thing, see if I'm enjoying the music, see if I'm still enjoying writing, and came back out, tried it, tested it, and here I am.
Seemed pretty good.
Still doing it, thank you. Thank you.
What do you love about touring? How long since you've toured in Australia?
Over 7 years now.
Are we different? Are Australian audiences unique in any way?
I don't know. I don't see the difference in audiences, really, because the response I get from the audience is basically the same everywhere, please God. They sing the songs. They sing the song, I entertain them, they sing the song, we all have a good time, and really and truly, that's what I'm there for.
Your songs are predominantly happy. I think
that's why
people hum them and sing them around the office when they think of it, because they're happy. Why do you think that is?
Because I'm a happy person.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, why be self-indulgent and sort of sing about problematic things? Music is supposed to be something of happiness, make people happy. Yes, you can make social comments. I mean, even like Bob Marley makes social comments, but they're not unhappy.
Sure.
It's a happy, what's the word? Projection, basically. And I try to instill that in my music.
Yeah. But it still makes people feel. It doesn't have to be...
You know, it can make you think. My music can make people think, but certainly not make you depressed and make you think negative thoughts.
No, very true. What is a highlight for you of your musical career, if you had to pinpoint a single moment?
I would say the success of Caribbean Queen.
And why that one in particular?
Because
it
gave me international recognition. You know, I mean, I've had hits before. I was having hits since in the 70s, 1976 was my first successful record. But in England and Europe, even Love Really Hurts got to, I believe, number 12 in America, but it things sort of went a bit downhill after that because...
Did top 12 here.
Yeah, it was successful.
Yeah.
But what happened then? The record company I was with, which was GTO, was bought over by CBS. GTO was an independent company that I was able to relate to the people. I went to CBS, and not because of my own doing. It just happened that way. And CBS was a big corporate. And it wasn't... And then they wanted me to stay with the Lovely Hurts sort of genre. I was listening to American music coming over and wanted to get to America. And I wasn't getting it from CBS. I was able to get out of the deal. In fact, I almost gave up music.
Wow.
Until I met with Jive, which is where all the Caribbean Queen and all these songs came from. I'd already written Suddenly and another one called Lucky Man. The owner of the record company heard the songs and said, Billy, you're going to America? And I thought, yeah, sure. Lo and behold, I was sent to America. While I was there, I wrote Caribbean Queen and the
rest of
the...
Was she always going to be a Caribbean Queen? Was she always going to be a Caribbean Queen? One stage, was she a African Queen or a European Queen?
Right,
tell me a bit about that.
Well, it was written as European Queen. And Clive was the person that suggested it does not sound exotic enough in his best South African accent. He was a South African man. Ex-musician came to England to seek his fortune. He came over with, was him and Mutt Lang that came over together.
Yeah.
Mutt Lang used to be they had some sort of musical relationship in South Africa. And he suggested, try African Queen, try...
Australian? Did we get a look in?
Well, that's coming. That's a come. That's a come.
But you settled on Caribbean,
yeah,
so that
and,
right?
An African Queen.
It flowed well.
It flowed well. It all scanned.
It
all fitted perfectly.
Scanned. That's the word.
Scanned,
that's
a
musical
scanned.
Term, isn't it?
That's right.
Something scans
it's
in with
scanned
the music.
Perfectly. Yeah. You know, one of the reasons why I'm still out here is because the people I'm working with are so different to the people I worked with before. Lovely bunch of people. My daughter's involved in it. Number one, she's one of my backing singers.
Fantastic. What's her name?
Cherie.
Cherie, beautiful.
Cherie, right? And I'm still enjoying what I'm doing. I'm here to give people a good time and give myself a good time.
Well, it has been so wonderful to catch up with
you
today.
Angela.
Thank you so much for a chat.
Thanks for having me,
amazing time while you're here.
Thank you very much. I've been having an amazing time. Great cuisines you all have here.
We've got good food, haven't we?
Very, very much. Honestly.
Yeah, we've got everything.
Trust me. I'm a vegetarian and I went to this amazing restaurant today.
I made a great kale, tomato and lentil soup last night with a little bit of mustard powder and chili that is fantastic.
I'm available for dinner, you know. Just give me a shout.
Okay. Come on over. Lovely. That'd be awesome.
Thank you.
You have to sing for your supper, though.
I will sing.
Okay.
I'll sing your lullaby.
Done. That's a deal. If you're wondering if I took him up on his offer, well, that would be telling. See you next time. I'm Ange Bishop and this has been Starstruck, a Studio 10 podcast for 10 speakers.
Speak's latest podcast, 10 News First Person, will bring you amazing stories from all over the country. Stories that matter from journalists with passion. I'm Rolda Jacobs and I'm proud to present these stories to you. You can find 10 News First Person on the 10 Speaks page, on 10 Play or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.